Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Good morning, everybody. Hopefully everybody is surviving after Thanksgiving and feeling stuffed, and you guys are out there doing your holiday shopping already. So today's going to be a Pat Smokin's day, of course. We're taking the day off because, we need to, after all the turkey that we ate and everything. So in the meantime, we got some cool things for you. We got some past moments, some Thanksgiving stuff here. And then an interview also with our friend Mark Bonilla in regards to the Monkees. As you know, the Monkees have been touring lately. They just did their final shows recently. So we're kind of honoring them in that aspect in that way. So in the meantime, guys, enjoy the past moments. But also don't forget about our sponsors. That's right. Make sure we go to Amazon and go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and download any music that we play. Today's theme is In the Mall by Weezer, because, well, everybody's shopping right now. Simple as that. Because they haven't written a song yet about Amazon, that at least, well, that I know of. And also, don't forget, too, if you're going to be doing any anything with your family, you guys want to make your own shirts and stuff like that, make sure you go to StrangerPrints.com. They're really easy. Go to StrangerPrints.com. For all the different pricing and see what they can do for you. They're one of our sponsors as well, and they help us with our shirts that we give away. And we're going to be giving away those shirts pretty soon, too, as well. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our past moments. And we'll catch you guys next week because we'll be back, all of us, in the studio live. So take care. We'll talk to you then. All right. Well, you know what?
Right.
Anyway, so we have something we wanted to give to you guys, basically. So let's see. How can we start this off here? Where the heck is it?
You're not used to being produced.
No, here we go. All right.
Whoa. Breaking news.
Man bites dog. Film at 11.
Oh, me. Hello. Hello and welcome.
I'm sorry.
You said man bites dog and I started seeing it. Okay. Hello and welcome to an episode of Historical Inaccuracies, the show that takes, you wrote, oh no, never mind, that takes a look at historical events which have been falsely documented down through the years. Today's episode, The Very First Thanksgiving.
The first Thanksgiving dinner took place in 1621. However, it did not take place outside with a long table. It took place inside a large casino, which the Indians had just finished building in October.
Contrary to what most scholars believe, the pilgrims did not come to America to escape religious persecution. Instead, they came here to gamble.
Chief Running Bear, we are honored that you have invited us here to share Thanksgiving dinner with your tribe. Now, having said that, would you please put $10 down on black for me? Thank you so much. Now, where is that drink, girl? I ordered my Corona an hour ago.
Yes, it was actually gambling that brought the Indian and the white man together. You see, Las Vegas was much too far for them to travel, too. Plus, Atlantic City did not have any affordable vacation packages. So spending Thanksgiving inside their first casino was the perfect solution.
Prior to the meal, a blessing was needed to be given by the eldest member of the tribe, Kanaka Toto, which in his native tongue means Texas Hold'em.
So when it was time to give the blessing, he asked everyone to join hands. As he closed his eyes and bowed his head, he said,
"Nine a winner, pay the front line, take the don'ts. He's coming out again for a new point. Four, four's the point, mark four. Who wants the hard four? Five wants four. Ace, deuce, scraps wants four. Four, and he made it the hard way. Pay the front line, take the hard. We have a shooter and a good one coming out for a new point. Get your bets down, ladies and gentlemen. He's a rolling point as nine, place nine. Eight shooting for nine. Five shooting for nine. Who wants to come? Nine a winner. He's got a hot hand. Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. Six to point, place six."
Unlike what the history books tell you, the pilgrims and Indians did not feast on corn, squash, or even turkey. No, they mainly lived on Texas toast, shrimp cocktails, and an awesome, delicious steak and eggs breakfast, which was only $3.99 before 10 a.m.
Oh, that sounds good. As the first Thanksgiving came to a close, and despite an awesome game of craps by Captain Miles Standish, the pilgrims ended up losing their shirts to the new Indian friends who didn't even wear shirts.
Yes, the pilgrims learned many important things from the Indians, such as how to plant corn, how to use fish for fertilizer, and when to double down. However, it was not until they played casino games like Wheel of Wampum and Let It Scalp did they realize the true spirit of Thanksgiving.
Yes, that is true. Now that's all the time we have today to make words. Be sure to tune in next week on Historical Inaccuracies when we show you the true meaning of Christmas with a special celebrity guest, Steve Martin.
Nine a winner, pay the front line, take the don'ts. He's coming out again for a new point. Four, four's the point, mark four. Who wants the hard four? Five wants four.
All right, I think we got the guys over there. You there, Amber?
We are here.
Alrighty, cool deal. You guys had a little bit of traffic. It's only like a mile away.
We did. So, yeah, there's a Costco right here. And let me tell you what, everybody is at Costco.
Oh, yeah, Saturday.
We're going to go over to Costco and just do the bullhorn there, but people didn't look too happy about it.
Yeah.
They didn't look terribly receptive, so.
I see.
But we came to the coffee expert place, and we have one of the assistant managers at Starbucks with us, Michael, and he's going to tell us. He didn't know it was National Espresso Day, did you?
I had no idea.
Whoa.
No idea. This is Michael.
Shame on you, Michael.
Shay, he said shame on you. No, but I'll tell you what, he knows a lot about espresso. So he's going to tell us about something new at Starbucks.
All right, go ahead.
So we have these new machines called Mastrena 2, and there's something called Updose Espresso. It's like extra caffeinated and extra smooth. I have about four shots every day. Ooh. Gets me going for my shift.
Four shots.
Four shots, yeah.
How many times does he go into the bathroom?
Anyone, I'll start shaking, but.
So, Sean says, how many times do you go to the bathroom?
Several times a day. I got to have a lot of water.
At least
yeah, like a lot of water. Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely blonde espresso every time. It's going to be smoother, like a lot creamier and more caffeine.
A blonde
yeah, so
espresso.
You know what I didn't know? I learned about this. My girlfriend is an espresso nut. She's like a junkie. She's like, I'm going to Italy for espresso. I'm like, can't you get it here? And she's like, no. So her thing is, she told me that espresso beans and coffee beans are the exact same.
They are, yeah. It's just so how it's ground. So it's ground to like a more finer ground, and then it's just pressed with lots of pressure to make like that nice creamy little shot of espresso.
Yes. Okay, and then the amount of caffeine is like, there's actually a little bit less caffeine in espresso. It's just more of a dense.
So like a tall cup of coffee would have more caffeine than like two shots of espresso. Yeah. But then if you fill like a cup full of espresso, you know, that's going to get you going. But yeah, cold brew is going to have the most actually.
Cold brew is going to have the most?
Yeah.
Why is that?
We brew it overnight, so it takes like 20 to 24 hours. It's never heated up, and that just soaks up all the caffeine overnight, and we just serve it straight up.
That's what you need, Sean, for your bathroom times.
I think so, yeah. Hey, Everett, why don't you go ahead and give him the facts, but let's do it in a manner of true or false and see how smart manager Mike is.
Yes. Can I test you true or false on some things? Okay, here. Hold this and lean towards me. There we go.
And lean towards me. I like that.
So, true or false, espresso machines use 90 pounds of pressure per square inch.
Oh, man.
True or false?
That's a tough one. I actually don't know.
Not sure?
Let's say true.
And he works at a Starbucks!
It's close. You're close. It's 132 pounds of pressure per square inch.
That's pretty insane.
I know, right? Wow. Okay. So here's another one. Ready? True or false? One shot of espresso requires 50 coffee beans. Come on, you gotta do this.
Ooh. 50 coffee beans, man.
Come on, manager Mike.
That kind of seems like a lot. No. Let's say true.
It's true.
Yay.
Okay, so this is next one. Okay, let's see. Ooh, this is a fun one. Okay, you ready? As of 2015, astronauts on the ISS, the International Space Station, can brew fresh espresso on board. True or false?
Oh, my God. Well, that sounds so amazing. I want to say true.
It's true. I just had no idea. I didn't know that one. I kind of want to go on the ISS now.
I think we're going to have to go there and check it out.
Let's do it.
How many questions has manager Mike gotten right so far?
He's got two. One wrong out of four.
Okay.
Two, three? How many?
Two. Okay, so if he's gotten two, okay. If he gets five correct, he gets a free coffee.
Oh, well, he takes all the coffee he wants for free. That's not very fair. Okay, so here, true or false?
Funny man.
The word espresso actually means in Italian when something is forced out. True or false? That sounds true,
but do you know the history of espresso?
I don't, but that's true. But tell me the history of espresso.
So it was actually invented in Italy for the common workers, so they have shorter coffee breaks. So instead of sitting there sipping their coffee, they're just going to take a shot of espresso and get back to work.
Oh, my gosh. That's a ripoff. That's such a ripoff. See, I learned something new, too. Okay, last one. Let's see it here. Crema is the... This isn't a good one. Okay. I think we did all of them. He got like only one wrong out of all of them. Ooh, here's a good one. You ready? Okay. Espresso is regulated by the Italian government.
I'm going to say false.
That's true.
No, what?
That's true.
It is true.
Wow.
That's trippy. Yes, okay. It says that it's regulated by the government because it is considered an essential part of daily life.
Yeah.
That is insane. Now I have to go to Italy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Hey, Amber.
So he did really good.
No, he did excellent. Wow. Have him go ahead and give the location of that Starbucks so people in our area can go visit him.
You got it. So, Michael, where are you guys located?
Catella and Winter Circle in Los Alamitos.
Right across from the very busy, crazy Costco.
Nice.
And that busy racetrack, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're across from the racetrack.
Right.
Wait,
all right.
So,
oh, that's down there a ways.
No, the horse racetrack?
No, I mean, it's not here. It's like...
Okay. Oh, yes.
I thought it was over here by Target or something.
All right. And happy birthday, Bree.
Oh, thank you so much. You're so sweet.
She said, oh, thank you.
Coffee's cool. Starbucks on us. What do you want?
Oh, for real?
Oh. Do whatever you want. Okay, guys. I want one of these. Do you want one of these crazy, what was it called again?
No, I want a
high octane thing.
No, a venti green tea with no water, breve instead, and 12. I'll text you.
Oh, my God.
I'll text you. I'll send it to you. Chat.
We're going to bring you something special, Bree.
Okay, bring something special, but no whipped cream.
Blonde. Lactose.
No whipped cream, lots of sugar.
I like caramel macchiato.
Lots of sugar. Yeah. We'll get that.
Okay, thank you.
We'll get that for you.
And by the way, I got to see your arm. Sean,
yes.
He's got a Pink Floyd tattoo on his arm. Mm. Only one on there. It's actually really, really cool.
Oh, nice.
Take a picture of it. Ask him if you could take a picture of his arm.
Yeah, take a picture of it. We'll post it.
Yeah. We will. Yeah. Michael, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you,
Michael.
All right, take care, bud.
Anybody on the megaphone, but... I think everybody's happy that I didn't get to
yell. Yeah, no, we're good. We're good. All right, come on.
Just use it to say goodbye. Use it to say goodbye to everybody.
The megaphone is on. All right, we'll see you guys back.
Well, speaking of Thanksgiving, we want to try something here. So what's the first number that we've got, Zach?
We have, let me grab my paper, sir.
All right. Mm-hmm.
So we figured what we try to do is a Mark and Brian thing here, is try to call people who have an unusual last name that deals with Thanksgiving, basically. You know, like the last name of Turkey, or Ham, or Yam, or Pilgrim.
Or Thanksgiving.
Or well, that would be a really unique thing here. So basically, Genesis
Georges
went out and... was able to Georgia. What? Chiso. Was able to get some phone numbers for us. So who are we calling first, Zach?
We have Alice Faye Gobble.
Okay. All right. So we're calling Alice Gobble.
Where's she from? I think it says it right there.
Oh, from Lebanon, Virginia.
Virginia. Okay, so we're calling Virginia. You behave.
Okay. Oh,
that's foreshadowing. Your call cannot be completed at this time.
Oh,
it's okay. There's a couple.
It's okay. Just try it again.
So that was really hard to look numbers up because people don't have landlines anymore.
That's right. It's okay.
Let's try it again.
All right, and this is Alice Gobble.
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome to Verizon's voice messaging service.
What's wrong with people?
I got, let's see.
Okay.
Got one more.
Okay, who are we calling now?
Let's try Barry Gobble.
Barry Gobble, okay.
Barry Gobble.
They're cousins.
They're cousins, yeah. And where are we calling at, Zach?
That is West Point, Tennessee.
West Point, Tennessee, Barry Gobble, okay.
To an automatic voice message system. 931.
All right. Well, let's go on to the next one.
Okay.
How about Anita Gobble?
Anita Gobble. All right.
From Waterloo, Rhode Island. Oh, I'm sorry. Waterloo Road, West Point, Tennessee.
I like that one. I need a gobble.
I need a gobble.
It's hard to dial these numbers and laughing.
I just like it right now. Brittany's like trying to like fix her hair and stuff. Like,
I'll take a break.
And I'm just thinking right now, it's like, you know, if you need any water, just ask Steve.
These headphones are falling.
Okay, who are we calling?
Still Anita Gobble.
Anita Gobble, okay.
Hello?
Yes, Anita Gobble, please. Hi, Anita? And we hung up. Okay. All right. That's okay.
She probably thought you were a telemarketer or something.
I would think Sean's a telemarketer if I heard him.
Yeah. Hey.
All right. How about...
Have I got a deal for you? It's a deal.
Okay. How about Della Ann Ham?
Okay.
You know, we should probably be very polite to these people and not let them know we're making fun of them.
Hello.
Don't bite my head off. I was just talking out
just
loud.
Just number.
Maybe don't say her name first, because maybe you sound like a telemarketer. Say, hello, and then she'll say hello.
Okay, well, this person is Della.
Okay.
From South Carolina.
Okay, so you know.
She probably talk funny.
I wonder if she lives near Mark.
So say
y'all. Mark's in North Carolina, though. He's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
The other Carolina.
We could leave a message. Maybe they'll call back.
I'm pretty sure a lot of these are going to call back.
That would be funny.
Do, 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 do. Aren't people home? Good God. Okay, let's go on to the next one.
Just let it ring.
Everybody's busy on Saturday.
All right. From...
Who are we calling now?
South Dakota, Keith R. Ham. All right.
What's the strangest name you guys ever came across?
Mine.
All at the same time.
You know, that's true. I worked at a company here in Anaheim over on Kramer, and we had a...
Who are we calling?
Keith Ham.
Keith Ham, okay.
We had two sales reps. Yep.
Hello?
Hi, Mr. Ham?
What?
Hi, is this Mr. Ham?
Yeah?
Mr. Hamm, my name is Sean Roberts. Your voice is on the air right now for a podcast called Your Weekly Dose out here in Los Angeles. We just wanted to call and say hello to you and wish you a happy Thanksgiving for you.
All right! Yes! We hung up! All right!
Well, that was very nice.
Okay, cool.
What's up with people?
Where was he from? He sounded like he had an accent.
He's probably like
Tennessee.
Guys. Where was he? Where was he
South
from?
Carolina.
South Carolina.
South Carolina. All right.
Ain't got no time for you.
This one's a little combination of kind of like Christmas and Thanksgiving. Betty Lou turkey. Betty Lou.
Oh yeah,
the Grinch.
Betty Lou,
who's no more than two.
Anyway, so most unusual name you said, Steve?
In the company, we had an international division. In the international division, there was a guy from China, a salesman, whose name was Ching Chang.
You have reached the voicemail box of...
Yeah. No one called that number. Okay.
Well, it's on Google. They could get it if they really wanted it.
Yeah. Well, that's how Genesis got it.
That's how I got it.
Okay, next one. Phoenix, Arizona. Jesus Yam. Or Jesus Yam?
Jesus
Yam.
So white.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, these two guys, one of them was Ching Chang,
oh my God,
and Ronald McDonald.
Wow.
So whenever one of them were in the building and they'd get a call and there'd be a Ronald McDonald, you have a telephone call.
The number you dialed.
Jesus is offline right now, so he can't take the wheel.
This is a fun one. Clement Gary Yam from Folsom, California.
Oh, Folsom.
They might answer.
Hey, yeah, could be in prison.
He's from California?
Yeah.
That or he's in prison, one of the two.
Let's find out.
All right. What's his last name? Yam?
Yam.
Yam, okay.
Clement Yam.
Your call has been forwarded.
Oh, my God. People answer.
Are they not charging their phones or just sending us to voicemail? I'm not even sure.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Let's try Jessica Yam.
Okay. The weirdest name I ever heard of, my cousin, back in the 70s, worked at a Jack in the Box.
Uh-huh.
And... You know, we already got the music, Steve.
And now I'm muting Steve's mic.
Hello. You're not available now.
Oh!
I just want to say if a random number called me, I wouldn't pick up.
I never do.
Yeah, that's tough.
Do you, Brittany?
No,
yeah,
I never do.
I don't either.
Not even if it's the same area code as me.
Brittany didn't
even... turn it back on till you behave.
Brittany didn't even pick up her dad's phone call.
I am not going to answer any of you.
Let's try Dexter Gobble from Minnesota, right. Florida.
I like that.
Right, Minnesota.
Dexter last Gobble. One.
Minnaloa, Florida, sorry. Look like Minnesota.
Minnesota, Florida. Got it.
Minnesota, Florida.
We're sorry. The number you have dialed is not in service.
It's like the phone bill, too.
Pay your bill, Dexter. Oh, good God. Well, you know, we gave it the old college try, you know.
Yeah,
We had a couple people hang up on us, though, which is
pretty
good.
Well, yeah, we at least got
and
to
that's,
directly
that's
talk
great radio.
One guy and wish him a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So.
Mr. Ham, who hung up on us. So.
He wasn't very thankful. Though.
Yeah, no, he wasn't, asshole. Anyway, well, let's go around the room real quick and find out what some of our own Thanksgiving traditions are and, you know, what our, each of our families have kind of done that's, you know, unusual or, you know, but normal for us kind of a thing. So let's start with Genesis. Go.
Traditions?
What are some, like some traditions that your family does at home?
My parents make it a point to make a turkey, like being Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other, like, okay, I guess I shouldn't speak for everybody in general, but they mostly, like, tend to make other foods, you know,
tamales.
Like, yeah, tamales, or they make pozole or other things, you know,
but more traditional Mexican dishes.
Yeah, for like Thanksgiving. But my family has always been like, no, like for Thanksgiving, we're going to make turkey and then we'll leave the rest for like the other holidays or something like that. So it's always like a point that we're going to eat turkey. My mom makes it like a certain way. So, I guess that's the tradition to stick to eating turkey. Like, somehow. Like when I was younger, we actually didn't ever cook Thanksgiving. Was it called dinner? Because we would be out of town and we would get back home like on Thanksgiving night. So tradition growing up when I was like younger, we would always stop by at Norm's and buy like their like Thanksgiving, like, festive dinner that came with, like, all everything, the pie, the turkey, and we would just come home and, like, eat that. So we would have Norm's Thanksgiving, like, dinner, like, for Thanksgiving for so many years, because, like, we would always go out of town and we wouldn't cook. We would just stop by Norm's on the way home,
like,
and
like visiting relatives or something like that.
No, we would go to Vegas random, but
that's
like,
a great place to go for Thanksgiving.
My dad worked like he didn't ever have like days off, and like his job only gave him Thanksgiving off, so like that week, and he was off like Wednesday. So like when we were little, that's like that was like our little vacation. Like we would like do that, so we would come back home on Thursday night and stop by Norm's, like pick up the Thanksgiving dinner for four people, come home and eat them. So
any holiday is a good reason to go to Vegas.
Yeah. I'm wondering if anybody ever stuffed a turkey with a bunch of tamales.
Ooh,
that'd be interesting.
Good. Yeah.
That'd be
interesting. Just good
fill
right
it
up.
How about you, Zach? Any traditions for you that you know?
Well, besides everyone sitting around the TV watching football while I'm pretty much just in the other room doing my own thing, you know, we just, you know, turkey stuffing, and it's I used to always joke with my family, like, we really have turkey dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, kind of like
early,
way too early, and the food options are kind of skimpy, because we just have like egg noodles and put gravy on that, no mashed potatoes, maybe a bean casserole. And turkey and stuffing. That's really
egg
it.
Egg noodles with gravy?
Yeah,
I know.
I've never heard of that. Where did that come from?
I don't know. That's been a thing since before
good,
I was
though.
Born. Yeah, just like those, you know, just like egg noodles, nothing fancy. And then you put the gravy on, and it's just, that's always been my that's thing or our good. Thing.
Wow.
And we do candy. I guess we change it up and do candy yams or maybe like a fruit salad. With like marshmallows
I
and
could,
stuff.
Oh, I can never eat that. It's too sweet for me.
Really?
Yeah, I never.
I love that.
Oh, yeah, the yam marshmallow.
Oh, I you know, and yeah, I just realized.
Like the fruit salad with marshmallows in it.
That too, yeah.
I just realized why we did that. Now, there was a time when my grandma's like, well, we need to start eating healthy, so no pie for dessert. I'm like, what? Wait, what?
You gotta have pie.
It's like, well, I'm gonna make a nice fruit salad with marshmallows.
How about you, Brittany?
I think we just do usually. I go to like a different family I have a big family because I have like four parents, I guess.
Okay.
That sounds weird.
Gotta wait. What?
My parents are. My parents are separated,
yeah,
and then
dad,
they're both remarried. So.
You got two families, basically.
And then so I have like my step parents' families too, and then my own parents' families. Yeah, we just do usually like regular Thanksgiving, but. Every year, I always make, I learned it from when I was little from my grandparents, this thing called monkey bread.
Oh, wow. Karen makes it.
A lot of people know. I do it, like, because I've seen recipes online, so I do it a little different. Like, I do it differently than the recipes I've seen online.
Put alcohol in it?
No.
Why not?
I should, huh?
Yeah.
They put some rum or something.
Yeah, exactly.
but, yeah, I'm always the one that, like, ever since I'm like, you know, old enough, I've always been the one to just make it and bring it to like all of the holidays, like Thanksgiving and Christmas. So that's like a fun tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like the thing that I like have kept in the family. So
Steve.
He's pulling at me.
Yeah.
Wake up.
I don't know. A lot of food. That's usually
Steve.
What I remember from Thanksgiving, a lot of food. I remember a couple of weird stories at Thanksgiving.
For my family, it's either small or big kind of a thing. Either it's very intimate, so we have a few friends over. And normally it's just the immediate family and then one or two friends and that's it. Or my mom goes big and we've got, 12, 15 people, kind of coming over. But I think ours, it's more of like everybody else, we have the turkey, we've got the ham. I think those are the necessities.
Yeah.
And then the side dishes, it's always
turkey and ham.
Oh yeah,
you guys do both.
We I do
both.
Too.
Yeah.
God,
yeah,
my a lot family, of people do that.
God, my family sucks.
Well, you have those ramen noodle things, or whatever. That's why.
Yeah.
With gravy sauce,
like a
like
a refugee.
Yeah. No shit, man. But so we'll do the turkey and the ham, and then the side dishes will vary, depending on what's going on. Like my mom made last year, and you were there.
Mm-hmm.
My mom made Brussels sprouts. Mm. I hate Brussels sprouts.
Mm. Not a fan either.
I hate it with a passion. But my mom did something different last year where she
put bacon in it.
No, it should have though.
That's probably the only way you're gonna eat it.
But no, I think she baked them a certain way or whatever, and I don't know what else she put on it. I liked them for the very first time.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, they actually had a nice taste to it. They didn't taste bitter or anything like that. So sometimes she'll do that. We'll do like string
beans.
She's
like sautéed them.
I don't remember.
Browned them.
Yeah, she browned them.
Yeah, you sauté them in like butter and garlic and stuff like that. And then you bake them to cook them.
Oh, but it was actually really good.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think the only tradition really was always trying to figure out whether or not we need the extra table, you know, the card table where all the kids sat, you know, and everything, and that was about it. But our Thanksgiving, it's either real big or real small. There's like no in between. You know, we got 12 to 15 people coming over, or we've got, you know, it's just the five or six of us, and that's about it. But we always get pie because we like pie. Unlike the Tegan family.
Tegan.
But no, we have our pies. We'll have like probably like two or three pies.
Yes.
You know, like we'll have a pumpkin, maybe a cherry or so. And then when my grandfather was alive, we always had to get a lemon meringue for him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so those are always good. So that's good. Yeah, so we get a decent spread, you know, which is kind of nice. So
when I'm there, it's always, what kind of pie you want? And I'm like, a little bit about all of
it. All of it, yeah. Oh, he'll take three pieces
of both of them. All of them, however many there are.
Yeah, cake, whatever, he'll take it all.
I'll take 20.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw an article quite some time ago, earlier this year, actually, and it was basically trying to talk about the Beatles and the Monkees and how ironic it was that it was 50 years ago this year that both groups broke up. And
did they plan this?
I don't know. And it was really interesting because the Beatles, I found some notes here. On April 10th, 1970, basically Paul McCartney announces that he's leaving the Beatles. The Beatles are breaking up. 4 days later, Michael Nesmith films his last TV commercial and announces to the guys that he's leaving the Monkees and buys himself out of the contract with Screen Gems. How ironic is that? 4 days later.
There's something fishy there.
Okay. And then Mickey and Davey go into the studio in September 22nd to do the last recording sessions for their last album, which was called Changes. So to discuss this whole thing here, I wanted to bring in a fellow musician and a fellow friend and fellow Monkey fan himself, our dear friend Mark Bonilla. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good, bro. So good to hear your voice.
Yeah. Good to hear anybody's voice.
True. Well, first off, before we get into this whole thing, Mark, how have you been and how have you been dealing with this whole COVID-19 bullshit?
Well, everything kind of, yeah. I mean, all the gigs as of March 8th, I think, or 15th around in there, went off the cliff like a herd of wild Mustangs. Just everything down, you know. And so that, you know, line of activity was immediately ceased. But I've actually been busy, like very busy with sessions and videos and, you know, all of these things here that have actually picked up as a result of that. There's a lot of, you know, because you're not in the studio, so people are asking, you know, can you do this at home, which I am. I'm working on Harry Shearer's new album.
Oh, nice.
And I've been doing all the guitar tracks here, which, you know, CJ Vanston's been producing it and doing all that, and I'm doing all the tracks here and working with a lot of other people and doing things as well here, doing a lot of VO voiceover stuff and also taking care of stuff out in the backyard that I said, you know, I never have enough time to go address this. See, now I have no excuse. I have to dig the trench for the new sprinkler.
So how short is that honeydew list now?
Yeah, well, no, it kind of recycles, you know. It just keeps once one thing gets solved, then another thing happens, you know. So it's a perpetual list. But that's a no problem with that.
Yeah, no, brother, I'm right there with you. You know, same thing for me. I was working for Trident Audio, and everything for making those mixers just stopped. So I got laid off, you know, from it and everything. And, came home, and we just finished repiping the house and everything. So here I am over at Home Depot getting paint and getting this and that to fix all the patchwork stuff up. So, yeah, I'm there with you. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I am getting tired of is keep going, what? What'd you say? What? Because the damn masks, you know, it's like, I feel like I hate those masks. I feel like I'm being kidnapped.
Yeah,
you know, with like a hand over there. I can't understand anything anyone says, you know, and forget going through a drive-thru. You can't understand a damn thing. You know, you got the terrible sound system coupled with the fact that there's cloth over the mud and a broken accent. So you've got these three things working against you at the time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
What are you going to do?
Exactly, my brother.
And you can't see people's faces. There's so much to seeing someone's mouth move and smile and expressions.
You're absolutely right. You don't realize how much of communication, verbal communication, until you talk to somebody, and a lot, and some of the intelligibility, if you don't understand what they're saying, you read the, you're subconsciously reading their lips,
which
I never thought about until this happened.
Yeah, and facial expressions. Wow. And then I felt my eyes are getting way stressed out because I'm just like always trying to express with my eyes because the mask is covering the rest of my face.
Right. Everybody starts looking like Marty Feldman. Good, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, you know, and real quick too, Mark, with those videos of, we've shared a few of them also on our page for on Facebook and everything. And dude, some of those things that you've done, I mean, wow, it's just some amazing work on that.
Well, thank you. You know, some of these, like the one with, I don't know if you saw the one with me and Mike Keneally, we did a Ravel Prelude, that just the two acoustic guitars.
Yes, yeah, we shared that one.
That was something that when I'd done the American Matador album, they had told me, you know, and Mike had learned the thing. We did it together. We were going to perform on the album until Warner Brothers says, look, you know, no, we don't want any other guitarists on the album. It's just you, the folks. It's you. And I was too green and naive to go, oh, well, no, I want it this way. I didn't have any weight at that point. So we did it, and I always felt bad about it. And I said, you know what? We got this downtime. So I called Mike, and I said, hey, what do you think about relearning this Ravel thing? And let's do it. Let's film it, you know. And he was totally into it. So he did it. Actually, his part, in my opinion, is way harder than my part because he's got these impossible chords that have no business being on a guitar because it's a piano piece, you know, when you've got 10 fingers. He's trying to do it with five.
Right.
And he just did an amazing job. He's such an incredible player. And it was just fun for us to reconnect and to do this finally after all these years, you know. So, well, yeah, so it's been nice. We've been doing a lot of stuff, working with a lot of different players.
Well, you guys did an amazing job on that, and kudos to both of you, Mark.
I'm proud of it. You know, I really am. And plus, you know, if you want to know where you are on the musical spectrum, go figure out some Ravel. That puts you right back down to the bottom, you know,
yes,
as far as sophistication, genius, all that. So when you really see somebody that did all this without Pro Tools, they sat at the piano and just had this in their head. It's amazing when you look at composers, especially guys like Ravel and Debussy and Vaughan Williams, all these people. It's just incredible stuff, you know. Just
I mean,
very humbling.
It made me want to, definitely humbling, because it made me want to go back and go, hey, does anybody need a tech? You know, and if so, I got 20 guitars here that you can use, you know, that I'm not using anymore. So, all right, my friend. Well, let's dive into this thing here, because I definitely want you in, because I know how big of a Monkees fan you are.
Totally.
And real quick, can you retell the story when Mickey Dolenz played at the Mark and Brian show?
Yeah, well, it was like a big charge. You know, so you got to understand something. I still have all of my Monkey Spectaculars from Tiger Beat. You know, all the magazines that had like all the monkeys in it from when I was like, you know, 10. Uh-huh. I still have all of those. And they're immaculate, you know, position. What happened one time is I went up to a paper. We used to have paper shacks. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember that. They were a place where people took their newspapers, right, to be told. So I was up there and throwing some newspapers away, and someone had thrown out an entire box of teen magazines. And I thought, my God, I've hit the mother load, you know. Wow. And I ran home and got my wagon, my radio flyer, and flew back up the street, that thing in, and was like paranoid. Like, I just robbed the bank. Like, someone's going to find out what I have here, and they're going to knock me over and steal it. You know, I was like, all summer I read these magazines, and a lot of them were the Monkees Spectaculars,
right,
you know, that had like all this stuff in it. So having Mickey on the show was like a big deal, you know, for me. I was like, this is great. I get to play with one of the Monkees. And so he came in, and the funny thing was, you don't realize, and you got all these A-list musicians from L.A., jaded guys, right? But everybody is a fan of somebody's. Mm-hmm. And when these, you know, when Steve Porcaro and Ed Roth had, they were playing keyboards, and I remember them fighting over who was going to play on I'm a Believer. They were like two kids fighting over, like, the last Twinkie cupcake, you know, whatever it was. And so I said, look, you guys are going to, here's what you're going to do. Because I had an interview. We were never going to get anything done. I said, okay, one of you is going to do the, you know, we'll do the organ, bam, bam, bam. That'll be your part. The other guy will do the dun, dun, dun. You know, the thing in the middle, the solo, uh-huh. You know, on piano, on electric piano. So they were fine with that. As long as one of them got to play one of the things, they were completely fine. And I didn't care because I got to play Pleasant Valley Sunday on my guitar. So that was fine for me, you know. But he was such a sweetheart, and, you know, it was just a joy to play with him.
Yeah.
You know? But it's funny how people get reduced to just fans, you know.
You do, especially when you meet certain idols like that. And matter of fact, yeah. You know, it's funny that you brought up Pleasant Valley Sunday. I actually finally learned to play that riff just like over the weekend myself, the week. So I'm like, oh my God, this is actually easier than what I thought. I went, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not hard. Yeah. Get that open A, man. It's great. It sounds great.
I love that story, though. Especially Picaro. Fighting,
playing with everyone, but again, play with Mickey, you know, and it's like there's something that just comes out, you know, like when you meet a Beatle, you know, or you meet somebody like that, it's just, you know, you revert right back to how you were, you know, when you were a fan, back to a kid. It's just, it happened to John Lennon when he was sitting next to Chuck Berry on the Mike Douglas show. He could hardly keep his urine in.
Right.
He was just like, like squiggling around in the chair, like looking at Chuck, like it walks, it talks, it's real, you know. It's so funny. It's so funny. You see Eric Clapton with Carl Perkins on the Johnny Cash show, same thing. He was like a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter who you are. You have somebody as your hero. You know?
Well, it's also like when Chuck Berry was trying to teach Keith Richards how to play Johnny Be Good, you know, and Keith was getting it wrong every single time.
Of course he was.
You know, and he's going, look, man, if you want to play it right, you got to play it like this.
And
I love the shot where Keith Richards is like turning around and just rolls his eyes like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know?
So good. Well, he's too busy being Keith Richards.
Exactly.
Right. I had an experience like that too, but I won't tell you who it was. But
All right. Well, let's dive into this whole thing here. And Zach, you're going to be on page 3 over there for it, because what we did was I kind of picked certain songs from each album here. So this is the worst to best Monkey albums. And again, I want you, Mark, on this because I know how big of a fan you are, and see if you agree with this list. And this is again the worst to best Monkey's albums rank. This is by UltimateClassicRock.com. This is all 12 studio albums. So this includes everything from their first one to the most recent studio one, which is called, I forgot, was it Good Times, which came out in 2016. So it's only those 12 studio albums here. It's written here, in decades since the Monkees first innovated pop culture, they never completely left. They just took the following list of the Monkees albums, ranked worst to best. Debuting in the fall of 1966, the Monkees launched with a TV show about a rock and roll band that crashed the party set in motion by the Beatles just a couple of years earlier. Soon that, the television group became a real band. Quote, it's like Leonard Nimoy actually becoming a Vulcan, end of quote, singer and drummer Mickey Dolenz famously noted, which led to one of the era's largest pop phenomenons. The show was canceled in 1968. The hits stopped coming a little bit, and by the end of the decade, the Monkees were pretty much over. They lived on Saturday morning reruns, syndication, and in the hearts of many fans. And in 1986, of course, MTV Marathon ran the program again, which led to the revival. So they've really never gone away. But members of the Monkees have often did perform, write, produce much of their own material, which has led to some of the great music over the years found on the Monkees albums. And here we go, rank worst to best. Number 12, what would you put in that position, Mark?
Boy, I would have to see the entire list because, you know, I kind of stopped. I was a huge Mike Nesmith fan. That was he was the guy. For some reason, I loved all of them. But for Mike, for some reason, I don't think it was necessarily just the sideburns and the wool hat. I think it was other things as well. He just seemed to be the one serious, like, musician type, you know, and so when Mike left, I just kind of went, you know, it's like having, you know, one of the Beatles leave. I just didn't, you know, I wasn't following him so much after that. So as far as the albums go, you know, the main albums that I had were like the first six.
Okay.
Up and through Head.
Okay,
you know,
gotcha.
So the other ones after that, although I know some of the tracks with Instant Replay and some of those, I really wasn't listening, so I wouldn't be a good judge of that particular part of their.
Okay, all right. So we'll run through these then fairly quick then. So they said number 12 would be Pull It, which came out in 1987. So we're going to play a quick track here from that. And basically, it says, hot on the heels of MTV Fueled Revival and highly successful tour, Mickey Dolenz, Peter Tork, Davy Jones were whisked into the studio to make a new album. Michael opted out. They said, sadly, Pull It is a product of an era which is dated production and failed to win over many new or old fans. One of the highlights, though, was a cover of Reckless Eric's Whole Wide World. But this is the single that they released called Heart and Soul. Love is a box. Love is the key. So it doesn't sound too bad, though. You know, I've always liked this one. Okay, number 11 was 1996 Justice. And this was the first album that they came out with where, again, it was just the four of them since Headquarters. Spotlights and the flowers. After all the parties and goodbye. There was something in the air. Something that we realized we would always share. So it says the end results are mixed from this album. The Stubby Michael Nesmith penned Admiral Mike, Son by Mickey, is one of the band's nastiest rockers, though. So that came out in 96. Okay, moving on. Number 10, they said, was Changes, which came out in 1970. So by this time, of course, they were down to a duo, Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz. Released the Changes. And of course, they went, as I mentioned earlier, they went into the studio in September of that year to go in to do it. And this one is Oh My My, which was one of the singles released. Let's go ahead and crank that one a little bit there. Oh my, my, I could love you forever. Oh my, my, girl, you feel so good. You made my heart sing. You make my life. Moving on. So the next one they say here is The Monkees Present, is number 9. Hey, hey, mercy, woman, of course, this one includes Michael Nesmith's Listen to the Band. I need help, I'm falling again. Play the drum a little louder, tell me I can. Now, by this time, Peter Tork also was gone from the band. So, okay, and the next one is number 8, Instant Replay, from 1969 also. Some people always complain that their life is too short, so they hurry along. Their worries drive them insane, but they still. So a lot of people feel that Instant Replay was a solid album that included no hits, but did feature some great songs written by Michael Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz, and Davy Jones. Neil Young even lends a hand for a killer solo on the song You and I. So what do you think about that so far, Mark?
Yeah, I would say so, you know, as far as those particular ones. I know that on Instant Replay, I think the Girl I Left Behind Me was on that, mm-hmm. which is one that made the greatest hits. And then also there was one, I think, called We Love You, Shorty Blackwell, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Nicky, uh-huh. Shorty Blackwell, that. Yeah.
He loved that song. I brought that up because, God, I can't believe you wrote that song. I said, oh, yeah. You know, so there were some good gems on that album, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so far you kind of agree with this so far, Mark?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, all right, so here we go. Number 7 is Good Times.
called Bring On the Summer. Now, this is the Monkees' first album in 20 years and first without the late Davy Jones, though he does get a song album on it, though. It's filled with great performances, captured the old spirit with new perspective. A few old recordings were woven seamlessly alongside brand new sessions to create an effect. Songwriting contributions by Andy Partridge, Noel Gallagher, and Paul Weller led the charge on this one. What did you think of that album, Mark? Did you get a chance to listen to that?
I did listen to some of it, yeah. And it was nice. Just I think just the fact that it had been so long since they'd put something out, you know, that it was great just to hear them again as a group,
mm-hmm.
even though Davey wasn't in it, you know. So again, it's hard to compare this to the original fervor that they had generated with the first six albums, you know, in
right.
seven. It was, you know, we were all grown up, you know, in our adultage at that point. So you see things differently than you did when you were young.
Right.
You know, so it's a hard thing to try and separate that line in between that, you know, because now I know how the songs are formed. I know how they're done. It's a little bit different now, you know. So.
Okay. All right. So we're halfway through. Here we are, number six, their debut album, The Monkees. So the band's debut album mixed garage band rocking with pure pop and even a dash of country. Though modeled after the Beatles in spirit, the group's sound and image was distinctly its own, with songs by Boyce and Hart, Goffin and King, and David Gates, as well as Michael Nesmith. The Monkees was more than just the soundtrack to a TV hit show. It started the pop phenomenon itself. Do you think that's where it should be, though, Mark, right in the middle?
Yeah, I think it's hard. It's either here or it's more of the Monkees. Both of those have about the same amount of clout, in my opinion. You have some great, you know, on the first one, you know, you had songs like Saturday's Child, I Want to Be Free, Tomorrow's Gonna, you know, Gonna Be Another Day. There were some really great songs on that album.
I love Saturday's Child, yeah.
You know, and, you know, there were a couple that were a little schmaltzy, like I'll Be True to You, I know, was kind of like, oh, boy, he's quoting. Okay.
Yeah.
but at least they followed that with Sweet Young Thing. You know, they rocked it back up again so the sugar levels could go down. You know, but and then, of course, Gonna Buy Me a Dog was great. It was just, you know, Mickey and Davey just clowning around and
right.
all the stuff that was great to crack, you know.
Okay.
So, I don't know. It's I would say, yeah, probably, knowing what else is to come, that
okay.
this would probably be, you know, I could switch this between this and more of the Monkees, you know.
Well, you're right on target, because according to them, yeah. number five is more yeah. of the Monkees.
More of the Monkees. Yeah, yeah. Because you had some great, you had Neil Diamond's, you know, Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow. You've got Sometime in the Morning, which is a beautiful.
Oh, God.
You know. Such a great song.
Mark, when the guys came out and did their tours, like the 20th anniversary or the 25th or the 30th, did you ever go out and see them?
Yeah, well, no, I had tickets and then I had a gig, so my wife went and she brought somebody with her because she was a huge Monkey fan too. So I was bummed because they were at the Greek, I think.
Yeah.
And I had a gig that came up that I couldn't turn down, and so it was like, damn, you know. But yeah, so I missed them.
Okay.
I really wanted to see them, but yeah, I heard it was great. So
yeah.
And Davey wasn't with him at the time. They did a tribute to him, I think, but he wasn't.
Okay,
there.
So it was more of the recent ones. Okay. I was fortunate enough to see all four when Michael did a surprise. But there was one tour,
right.
there was one tour, I think it was their Here We Come Again tour, where they came out and it was just Mickey on one side, Peter in the middle with an acoustic guitar, and then Davey on the other side. And they did acoustic versions of some of those songs, and one of them was Sometime in the Morning.
Yeah.
And to see it in that format was just so
beautiful. It's a beautiful song. It's absolutely beautiful. That's my favorite song off of that album. It just, I love that song. I just love how it opens up with that 12-string arpeggiation and just, or I don't think it was 12-string, actually. I think it's probably just Mike's Gretsch, but
okay.
it just sounds beautiful. It's a beautiful song. You know?
So here we go. So again, once again, number five is More of the Monkees. It was released barely 3 months after the debut album. More of the Monkees went on to become the group's biggest album. It topped the charts for 9 weeks, and by years end, the Monkees outsold the Beatles and Rolling Stones combined. Hits like I'm a Believer, I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, and she helped make this the biggest selling album of 1967. That's amazing. Okay, number four. Where do you think this one lands?
Okay, don't get excited, man.
I would say, I know what my favorite one, I would say it's probably The Birds, the Bees, and the Monkees.
You're absolutely right. The Monkees' fifth album is a brave mix of styles that not only includes Daydream Believer, the group's last number one single, but also many of their best deep tracks, psychedelia, country, 20s style, pop, and somewhat freeform freak out side by the side in harmony. The album closes with the anti-war song Zor and Zam, one of the period's best. So,
yeah. No, it was great. And I remember, it was a really cool thing. They had the one thing that bummed me out was the fact that Valerie was not the version that was on the single. If you listen to that, it's a different version of it. It's a little bit less energy, and also ends with bum 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 bum. Ends with the brass. It's not a fade out. It's a cold ending.
Right.
And I was bummed about that because the original had a lot more power to it. Davies, where he says "Come on" is completely different. Because we tend to focus on those little things. But it was cool because Magnolia Sims was a great song. It's, you know, because it skips in the middle. They made it skip. Did you remember that? It was like on one of the words, and then you hear the needle rips and then hits twice and then comes back. I thought it was a great idea. You know, there was some very cool stuff in that song. And, of course, Zor and Zam was great. Such an amazing thing. And Dream World was a great song, too. You know, a lot of real interesting stuff on there. I really enjoyed that album.
Yeah, and what's really interesting too is their first four albums that they released all were multi-platinum number one hits. The first four, which is, I mean, that was just amazing. I mean, to talk about, you know, bringing in Donnie Kirshner to say, hey, if you want to outsell the Beatles, he definitely helped them do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah.
Okay, so here we are now down to the top three. What do you think number three is going to be, Mark?
I think it's probably going to be Head.
You're absolutely right again, buddy. Look at you, man. What a show-off he is, isn't he? The Monkees' big-screen adventure Head flopped at the box office, and its soundtrack failed to ignite the charts. But time has been on side for both the film and the LP. It includes only six tracks, but some of the Monkees' best are here. The Porpoise Song, Circle Sky, my favorite, As We Go Along.
As We Go Along, I'm totally with you there. I got to tell you, man, that song to me, if I had 10 songs to take with me to the next planet, that would be one of them.
Okay.
I absolutely love that song.
Let's crank it a little bit and put it in Mark's phone a little bit so he can hear it too.
Yeah. I started playing that song, and he goes, and he looked at me, and I said, you know, this is one of my favorite songs of all time. So he started singing it. It was a very cool thing. We got to like share that for a minute. And
oh, dude.
What's cool about it is the fact that it's in 5/4 time in a lot of it. It's like it's not 4/4 or 3/4. It's 5/4.
Wow.
If you listen to it, there's a lot of odd signatures in there, and he sings over the top of it like you don't even know that it's odd. And it's just a beautiful, simple song, and you've got the da 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 bum ba da. You got that great flute line in there, and you know. And in the movie, it's great because Mickey's just walking through the countryside. It's a perfect. It's just a perfect song. I absolutely love that song.
Yeah,
that's probably my favorite Monkey song. As a matter of fact, close to being my first.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you, buddy.
Love that song.
It's definitely in there. let me tell you one thing. I don't know if you know, but of course, back in 1987, 86, 87, of course, Blonner, and with the help of Burt Rafelson and Burt, or Burt Schneider and Bob Rafelson, they decided to do everything all over again with the New Monkees. And I don't know how you felt about that or not.
Explain that again.
Sure.
Doing what over?
Doing the Monkees all over again. And because in 86, 87, there came out the New Monkees. And, you know, four new guys and everything and so forth. And I'll tell you, I'm friends with all four of the guys myself. They're all great guys. But they will tell you, first off, the script sucked, number one. But the music was, I think, for the time being, it was still very, very good music of what they picked for their album. Fortunately enough, last year, I think it was, or about a year and a half ago or so, Marty Ross of the New Monkees calls me up and says, Sean, you know the thing that we're going to be doing with Mickey next month? And I said, yeah. He goes, would you mind doing the sound for us? And I said, dude, I would be honored, you know? And so I took my Personas desk out there and everything, and we mic'd the guys up. And it was semi-acoustic and everything. And I was able to record 16 tracks live. And earlier in the evening, though, there were some fans there to have dinner with Mickey that they paid for and stuff. But then the New Monkees had gotten together for the first time in so many years. It was their 30th anniversary. And it was trying to bridge the two worlds of the new and the old and saying, hey, these guys were picked by the same people that created the new ones. You know, and Mickey Dolenz came on and performed with the guys. And I'm recording this, dude. And I'm and I'm just sitting there off to the side, you know, watching it from the whatever little wing we had in this club, because it was a small little club. It was the Pick and Whistle in Hollywood upstairs. So you know how small that place is.
And
I'm sitting there and I'm just watching it. And my son is standing to me to the right. And I go, you realize you're watching history right now, right? He goes, absolutely I am. And to finally get approval after all these years, you know, to say, hey, you know, they're part of the monkey family, too, because only eight guys can be called monkeys.
Right.
You know, it was just an amazing thing to watch, though. And to see them,
that you were able to be there for that.
Yeah. And to see them perform with Mickey and everything, and for Mickey to finally give, hey, yeah, these are part of our family members, too. You know,
it was really neat.
It was really neat. So, okay, we're down to number two and number one.
Bum, bum, bum.
Which one do you think it is?
Well, I'm going to go with what my sentiments are. I don't know if it's the public sentiments, but I would put Headquarters next.
Dude, you are what, four for four right now?
Well, I'm going to be four for five if this is right.
Yeah, Headquarters is number two. After relying on such a musician for the first two albums, the Monkees became a real band. For the first note to last, Headquarters is the sound of the Monkees providing themselves a genuine rock and roll band. Among the highlights with Mickey Dolenz penned Randy Scrouse Git, Peter Torx for Pete's Sake, which became the closing theme to the show's second season. The album hit number one, but was knocked out by the following week by those damn foreigners, the Beatles, with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Amazing.
And what was a beautiful song on there was Shades of Grey. Gorgeous song. Absolutely exquisite song. Probably the best song on the album as far as just production and thematic heft and all of that. It was just beautiful. But what's great, too, was you Just Made Me the One is great. And For Pete's Sakes, it's great. Do you know the story why that name?
I know Pete wrote it, but I'm trying to remember who he wrote it for, though.
Well, it wasn't that. Peter wrote the song, and they weren't going to put it on the album, right? And he says, if you don't put it on the album, I quit. I'm quitting the Monkees. So he forced their hand, which is why it's called, well, this is on here for Pete's sake. That's called for Pete's sake. It's because he threatened to quit. Yeah.
At that time period. Wow. That's a good story.
And it was a great song, and it was one of those. This was the same thing that happened with the Beatles. Remember the Beatles cartoon?
Yeah.
Okay. On the second season of the Beatles, they came out with "And Your Bird Can Sing" was the theme song. It had them coming in on a balloon, like a hot air balloon. And the thing was that we didn't know what that. Or I didn't know what the song was because. In America, Capitol, in their infinite greed and avarice, would steal songs from the Parlophone 14 song albums to make their own albums here, like Yesterday and Today. There was never a Beatle album that they released called Yesterday and Today. There was never a one called The Early Beatles. There was never one called Beatles 65. They would steal tracks from there. Right. And Your Bird Can Sing was not on Revolver. It was supposed to be, and it was in the English version, but not here. So when that song came out, I was like, what is this song? I've never heard this song. What a great song. And it was the same way with For Pete's Sakes, is the end credits of the second season. I loved that song, and I didn't know what it was. You know, just one of those things where I hadn't heard it yet. And when I finally got headquarters, well, that's the song. That's the one that they use. You know,
yeah.
And it's great because Nicky completely shanks the vocal at the end on the fade out.
Oh, yeah.
When he's saying to be free, he completely cracks, and they left it in, which he navigates it down to where he has to go. It was a very valiant recovery. But the fact that they left it in, I loved it. It's my favorite part of the song.
That's
I know.
It's just on the fade out, but it's such a great song. It's a great album, too, the fact that they did everything themselves fine. You know, it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites is the one that Nesmith penned. We just played it right
Sunny
now.
Girlfriend?
No, not Sunny Girlfriend. Zach, hold down the button for headquarters. Just hold it down, and it's going to... You just may be the one.
Yeah.
Love
that's a
that.
Great song.
And such a simplistic song as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Great bass line. How it comes in, it's very cool.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, holy cow, you know... And it's just one of those very simplistic ones. And I was talking to John Jorgensen. I'm sure you're aware of him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking to John one time, and I found out that he played with Nez up in a festival in Seattle, in Portland, Oregon. And he goes, "Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about." And he said, "We're actually going to be doing a tribute to Papa Nez." And I said, "Well, what song are you doing?" He goes, "You Just May Be the One." And I said, "Oh, off of Headquarters?" He goes, "Well, you must be a Monkees fan then." And I'm like, dude, like you wouldn't believe, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he did a very good job of recreating that song.
Oh, great! You know? Well, when it's a love like it, it's a labor of love. Then you do want to do justice to it. You know, it's very important. Because you remember how it was when you heard it. That's the thing about redoing songs. You know, you have to remember that you don't have to do it just like they did it, but you have to do it so that when you redo a song, it's really the reflection of the emotionality that you had when you heard that song. That's what you want to have in your version, how you felt about that song when you first heard it. And that's an important factor. And I'm sure he probably did that.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Yeah. All right, my friend. So here we are. Number one, make it 6 for 6, brother.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you think it is?
It's Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones LPB is what that is.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
Winner.
It's an amazing record. Amazing record. From start to finish. There isn't a weak spot on it.
The band's fourth album in little more than a year takes the template of their previous record and self-contained headquarters and adds a couple of extra players to flesh out the sound. The result is the Monkees' best LP. Pop, psychedelia, country, and rock and roll dominate. But Crisis Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones LTD also feature the first use of the Moog synth on a pop record. Outbeating the Beatles. The result is the Monkees' definitive effort, first-rate material from inside to outside of the band, including Michael Nesmith's Daily Nightly and the Jerry Goffin, Carole King classic Pleasant Valley Sunday.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a phenomenal, right? And Paul Beaver, I think, was the one that did the synth on Daily Nightly. I think he was the Mo guy who went on to do records with Bernie Krause, Beaver and Krause. It's some phenomenal stuff. But, I mean, Salesman is great. Doran the Summer is probably the one that will share the number one spot with As We Go Along. I love that song. It's such a beautiful arrangement, and Chip Douglas plays his ass off on bass.
Yeah, he did.
It's such a beautiful, the lyric is great, and Mike sings it great. It's just a beautiful, beautiful song. I'm tired of listening to that song. It's great. And then he goes, kicks right into Love Is Only Sleeping, which again is in 7. So they were doing some prog stuff back then. Nobody knew it.
Right.
You know, and then you've got What Am I Doing Hanging Around, which is such a great country.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, kicking song. So great.
And I love the banjo part, that whoever played it, whether it was Peter or not, you know, I don't care. That banjo in it was just phenomenal.
It's perfect, yeah. And then, of course, Pleasant Valley Sunday. Don't Call on Me is another one. And it was great because Kevin Gilbert and I went up to the Elegant Pump Room at the Palmer House High above Chicago. We were actually sitting in there thinking of this song, you know, because at the beginning, that's what Mickey says. He goes, you know, now from the Palmer House High above Chicago, asking that
question. Yeah.
You know. Yeah, and then it starts with something that sounds very much like Don't Let the Sun Catch You Crying. Same, you know, the same kind of C major 7 to F major 7. But it was one of Mike's early songs that he did when, I think he was called, when he wrote A Different Drum. I think this was one of those early songs that he wrote when he first came to L.A. or he was still in Texas. And so they rekindled it and put it on the record, which I'm glad, because it's such a great song.
Now, did you know that Michael actually performed Different Drum on one of the episodes?
No, I didn't know that.
Okay, I'll have to email it to you. I can't remember the name of the episode. I'm sure some of the Monkees fans, because we made sure that told people on the podcast Zilch and the new Monkees Facebook page that we were going to be talking about this today also. One of the episodes where Davy Jones goes to try and help this little, well, not this little girl, but this other gal become her partner in singing. And the mother tries to basically tear away Davy Jones from the Monkees. And in the episode, Mickey does his impression thing. Peter is a very poorly done magician. And Mike comes out very nervously and does like a speed metal version of Different Drum.
Wow.
And it's the first time that that song is ever on the ever associated with the Monkees, basically, you know, or considered a Monkees song. So, but if you have the DVDs or whatever, I'll let you know what episode it is. I'll email it to you.
Yeah, let me know whichever. I'd love to see that. I didn't even recall that was there. Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
So,
good to know.
So now comes the big question, Mark. A lot of people have been advocating for it and everything. I know many fans want them there. Do you think they deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, yeah, I without a doubt. They, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I know that Kirshner was painting this picture like, you know, the Beatles and it was this thing, but they did create the music. I mean, whether or not, you know, you have other singers and players in there that have other musicians come in to do session work on an album. It doesn't diminish the impact of a band or of a singer. You know, you got guys like James Brown, you've got so many people, they had a whole band. You know, what's different about session players, than as opposed to like the regular guys that you thought were playing? It doesn't matter. They did sing them and they did eventually write them. and perform them. So to me, there should be no doubt that they should be in the Hall of Fame. Not without a doubt. They've made a massive impact and contributed such wonderful music to that generation. There's no doubt. Especially seeing some of the people that actually have made it in there. It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. You know, so... Yes, absolutely, 100%. They should be in there.
Mark, why do you think, because, I mean, everybody was using the Wrecking Crew at the time. I mean,
the Beach Boys.
The Beach Boys, Sonny and Cher, the Birds, the Turtles were using them. Why do you think the Monkees got singled out? Do you think, was it because of the TV show? Or...
Well, I think it was because they originally were portrayed as, you know, because, yes, it wasn't because of the TV show, because they showed them playing their own, they playing the instruments on the show, miming to the tracks, you know, so they left off, you know, the session players off the first. They didn't start listing them until I believe it was either Headquarters was definitely Pisces. Is when they steal the fourth album, they started listing the players that were on there.
Right.
Guys like Glenn Campbell and others that were on the albums. So I think that the impression was that they were playing all of their own stuff, writing. You know, I don't think there was any question about who was writing the stuff, because Voice and Heart was getting just as much recognition from the get-go on the first album as, you know. So that wasn't an issue. I think it was the fact that I think the public was made to believe that they were performing their own stuff because you saw them do it on the show. But in reality, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that doesn't matter. It's the impact and the influence that the music had. And so that's why I don't think, you know, if people are holding it against them, I don't think they called them the Prefab Four and all this, because I think it was the intention. But I think they surpassed the intention, and of course they hated that image. You know, they wanted it, which is one of the reasons why they blew it up with 33 and a third Revolutions Per Monkey, which aired.
Right.
It basically completely destroyed, you know, their image, because they were tired of it as much as the public was.
Yeah.
You know, they signed on, but it became this other thing, and then, you know, all the rebellion that they, you know, they were putting them in a black box and, you know, keeping them in like you know, animals in a cage. So they objected to it as much as the public did when they found out. So, you know, but the fact is that they did create this stuff. You look at Headquarters, it was a great record. That was three records in. That was only the third record that was released. So they didn't hold the facade for too long, because the first two albums came out relatively quickly.
Yeah, 3 months apart from each other.
Yeah, so it really doesn't make much sense to hold any kind of animosity about it. You know, and there was plenty of stuff that they did afterwards that they were great. You know, some of the best albums came out after they were so-called outed, you know. It
right.
doesn't matter. Like you say, the Beach Boys is a good example of that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Mark, I just want to thank you for joining us, man, and getting your perspective on it, too, as a fan and as a fellow musician also. I hope you had fun doing this with us, my friend.
I did. It was such a great, and actually it was funny, because the Monkees were what put Kevin Gilbert and I together, because we were on the Keith Emerson session. He didn't know who I was. Keith brought me in, and I remember we went out to dinner, and I was talking about the fact that I like stuff dry and present, which apparently Kevin did too. And I said, because otherwise everything starts to sound like the end of Pleasant Valley Sunday. And he starts laughing. I went, okay. And he goes, I swear to God, he says, I use that example too. I said, you're shitting me. He says, no, I've used that example exactly. You're into the market? I said, oh, dude. And that was our bond. The bond was the Monkees. That's what got us talking together. We were huge Monkee fans. As a matter of fact, in Toy Matinee, we did a section of Zilch. We started, you know, in the middle of Turn It On Salvador, we broke down and did Zilch, Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. And then we started to rephrase, you know, like No More Notes Until I Get a Paycheck. You know, we did stuff like that just to vary it.
My God.
But we were huge. You know, that's what we would warm up with vocally backstage was Monkee songs, Kevin and I.
That is funny. I never knew that. God bless Kevin, man.
Oh, yeah. Massive Monkee fans, both of us. Gentle Giant and the Monkees, man, were our two binding bands, you know. So isn't that interesting?
That's funny. That is funny, yeah. Brother. Well, yeah. You know, Mark, I can't thank you enough for joining us on this and everything, buddy. You've been a wonderful friend to this program. I really appreciate it. And when this whole COVID-19 thing blows over, dude, we still got to get to that damn Mexican restaurant and have ourselves some good Mexican food.
Right, and I know the one, too. I've got the one there. Because those Arco Iris is gone. They pulled up stakes. But there's a good one out in San Fernando called Los Tres Hermanos that's very, very good. So, yes, ooh, let's do that.
We got to do it, brother. I promise I wasn't going to flake on it. I'm still going to hold myself to that
promise. No, we're going to do it. It's going to taste so good, too. For more than one reason.
Awesome, so, my brother.
Yeah, well, listen, thanks for having me on. This was fun talking about these guys, man. I just, you know, they're so ingrained into my DNA, you know, for all these years. I never get tired. I always have a Monkees greatest hits, you know, playlist in my iPod and the whole thing. They're phenomenal. And so I'm glad you guys gave them the props and the time. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you so much, Mark, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good, buddy. Okay, you guys stay safe. We'll talk soon.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
How cool was that, though?
I learned. Really I was sitting here absorbing. And I was like, oh, I know this song. Oh, that's there are several of them. I was like, oh, that's the Monkees. I didn't know it was that.
Isn't that amazing then, when that happens?
Yeah, and then hearing about the albums and I learned a lot.
It was amazing.
Did you learn a lot, Steve?
Or did you go back? Did you go back in time?
I went back in time.
Did you?
I did. Oh my God! Because I remember. My very first album I ever owned was Meet the Beatles when it came out. Uh-huh. And I was, like, totally into the Beatles, and I loved it. And then I started watching the Monkees show because it came on. I had read or heard about how it happened, how they were, you know, they all auditioned and stuff. And I was like, well, I wonder what that's going to be like. And it was silly, which I kind of like silly.
Mm-hmm.
But the music was commendable. It was like... Yeah. Everything, pretty much everything they did was something that I enjoyed listening to. And so it made a spot inside my mind for that music to be next to where the Beatles were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's telling the fact that at times they outsold the Beatles.
Yeah.
That's how big they got. People don't realize how big that was. The Beatles had...
They were huge!
Several number one songs... All at the same time.
The Beatles
and
were the Beatles.
Well,
I
mean,
to be meta, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, is that also... I mean, you have to realize, too, there was at one point when the Beatles came out, they held the number one, the number two, the number three, the number four, and the number five spot on Billboard magazine.
Mm-hmm. When? What year? When?
It was astounding.
You know, we're talking, what, 65, 66, somewhere in there. You know, and I mean, no one has ever done that before. And now here comes this American version of it, you know, which was a TV show, basically. And it comes out and, you know, and I have a love-hate with Donnie Kirshner. And we can talk more about that later on. You'll figure out why. But he did set out and said, if you want to outsell the Beatles, we can do it.
Wow.
I've got the right songwriters and everything else or whatever. Let's put this together, you know, and that's what happened.
Wow,
it was just one of those times where they did something in a way that doesn't normally work that well, but they got four guys who made it work better,
and they had to act like they've known each other and have been each other's best friends.
Wow.
You've got two true musicians with no acting experience at all whatsoever. You've got two actor singers. Mm-hmm. Who couldn't play an instrument to save their lives. Well, except Mickey. Mickey learned to play guitar because he was in a band when he was younger, though. But, I mean, you actually had two singers, two musicians, you know, and the singers were actors also. For Mickey Dolenz has always said, for me, it was just another acting job.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was, you know. And how he got picked to be the drummer was that they said, okay, guys, we need to figure out who's going to play what instrument. Mike, Peter, and Davey all took one step back, and there was Mickey left to stand.
Oh, my goodness.
So they said, okay, guys, what do you go? Oh, Mickey, you're volunteering? No.
Whoops.
I'm
and he turns around.
Oh,
like,
yeah. And, and the other three guys have stepped back, you know.
They threw him under the bus.
They pretty much did. It was obvious Davy Jones couldn't do it. He was too short. You know.
Excuse me?
He was too short.
What did that have to do with anything?
I didn't stutter. Stutter.
Yeah, say that.
But no, I mean, it was something miraculous that came together. And like I said earlier, for their 20th anniversary, it exploded all over for them. So the Monkees really have never gone away. And that's the amazing thing, where the Beatles... The last thing they put out was like Free as a Bird, which was something very unique in because it was an old tape that John Lennon had. Mm-hmm. And the other three got together and were able to do this one song. These three to four guys have constantly put out an album. I mean, the last album came out, and I'm talking about the original, whatever. Mm-hmm. It came out in 1970, okay? The next one after that... came out in 1987.
Wow.
Okay.
About 17 years there.
So, right. Okay. So, then after that, you've got what? Justice, that came out then in 1996. And then you had Good Times come out in 2016. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Every 12 years, they come out with an album, you know. But in between that, you've had some live stuff. And there is a brand new live Monkees album with the last two remaining Monkees, Mike and Peter, Mike and Mickey, because Peter passed away recently also. That's where I was going with that. And the thing is that has gotten great reviews, because they show you with the age of these guys that they're still going strong. And the musicianship from the band and from them themselves is spot on, and how well these songs still hold up.
Now, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's like one of those deep fan questions. Okay, so with the Grateful Dead, deadheads prefer the really nerdy musician ones. They prefer all of the live shows, and they categorize them. Mm-hmm. And they have like, oh, this is my favorite live show for this reason, and this song, and this. And it's like a huge thing for the live. Do the Monkees have a similar thing? Like very specific live shows that were like quintessential to listen to?
I would say this. Periods. I would say this. The live shows that were, I think, extremely special were the ones where Michael Nesmith joined them on the 20th anniversary tour. Because... here they are celebrating 20 years of being in the industry. Everything fell in line in the stars for them. It so happened MTV had dropped and did a marathon of the TV show. It was at that time that the tour was announced. But it was works in the prior before MTV did anything. It just happened to propel it. And then the tour comes out. So, and Mike did do a couple of spots here and there. I was there for one of them. So, as a fan, to see Mike come out and see all four and have all four of them do the walk, that Monkees walk or whatever, off the stage and everything, to have Mike sing, listen to the band, you know, that was the treat.
Gotcha.
Basically,
so that's your live album.
And I think since Davey's passing, and ironically, Davey was the youngest of the four of them and the first one to go. So to Mike now, and they had been talking about all four of them going back out again, because Mike was kind of like, okay, I'm going to do it. And they did something in England. They did like 12 shows or something like that in England. And then Mike quit. And I don't know what it was or, you know, what have you. But now I think since Davey's passing, and especially since Peter's passing, he's I think really welcomed back open to, I can't deny I'm a Monkee.
Yeah.
I really can't. And he can't believe how many fans are still out there and go, are you guys idiots or something, you know, kind of thing, you know. And I think he's overwhelmed with that now. And when we interviewed him, and you could ask Steve, I mean, I was nervous as hell. You know,
yeah, I can because, imagine.
But not just because as a fan, because I knew at times how difficult of an interviewer he could be. And it was the complete opposite of that. And I was so grateful for that. It was very, very open about his music and what he did. And he even turned the tables on me and started asking me questions like, well, you play too, right? And da-da-da. And what happened? I'm like, yeah, what do you play? Well, I play this. And da-da-da. I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you asking me questions?
We're interviewing you.
You know, yeah. But it was so nice to see, to have that side of Mike Nesmith, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now with Davey's passing, and especially now with Peter's passing, to have Mike there to sing his songs and go deeper into the catalog, I think it's even more of a treat, you know.
Very cool.
Where they didn't do that before. They kind of did the hits, you know, or whatever, which was great, you know. But if you're doing tour after tour after tour, you've got all these other albums, you know, that you've done and everything.
Yeah, and then fans like the deep stuff.
Yeah, and like I said, when they came out and did these...
The B-sides, if you will.
Exactly, exactly. And when they came out and did stuff acoustically, and it was just Peter on acoustic, and they all took turns singing these different songs. Oh my gosh, that, you know, that was a wet dream right there. You know, and I think it was those special moments that made me like, wow, they're doing this song or they're doing that song that they probably haven't done live in 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the cool part about it.
What do they call Monkees fans?
Crazy people.
No.
Keys.
Well, you know, you have a dead head. What's a monkey?
No, we're just Monkees fans.
Monkees fans.
We're just Monkees fans.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do they come up with the name Monkees? I've always wondered that. The Beatles and the Monkees. I don't remember how.
They came up with it. I'll have to go back
Monkey
and look.
Monkey Trump's Beatles? No?
Nah, I don't know. I'll have to go back and look because there's a fellow by the name of Eric Levowitz that wrote The Monkey's Tale, which really depicts the whole story of everything, both the good, the bad, and the ugly. And
the T-A-I-L or the T-A-L-E?
Both.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a pun.
It's a pun. But you know, he really tells a good story about it and everything, and how there's even two versions of it, because you have to look at it from the production side of the TV show and the actual four guys themselves, you know, and what has transpired since and everything and so forth. It was really, really good, though. So, but I hope everybody
learned.
Enjoyed that, though.
I'm that was a lot of fun.
Listen to a playlist of some greatest hits.
I'll
have to edumacate myself.
I'll get
further.
You all of them, and there's even more deeper cuts on the Missing Link albums too.
Oh,
there's three of those.
You got those fan deep cuts.
Oh, deep cuts.
Monkees.
Yeah, baby. Exactly. Exactly. All righty. Well, let's get out of here.
I just have one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
If
Steve.
I could add,
sure, buddy.
You know, we were reading texts and stuff from listeners. I actually got a text from listener Debbie.
Oh, Deb.
In the show. Yeah. Hey, Deb. She's kind of funny. She says, hey, I love the show, but I have this feeling.
Uh-oh.
I hate you guys. I hate you because I don't get anything done from 10 to 12 every Saturday morning. So,
oh, Deb.
We are glad to hear that. So,
I
hugs and kisses
you.
Back at you, Debbie.
Love you, Deb. Absolutely.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
I say it to my kids all the time now.
Alrighty, guys. Well, that wraps it up today for our past moments for Thanksgiving. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Your Weekly Dose 1. Follow us on Facebook at Your Weekly Dose. And, of course, catch all of our past moments on Your Weekly Dose 1. And, of course, thank you to our affiliates also who redo our shows also, Delmarva and Lime City Radio. We thank you guys for joining us. In the meantime, we'll catch you guys next week. Be good. Have fun. Take care, world.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.